Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drantz. We are broadcasting live from the Kintec studio. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and rent-a-warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their three locations to serve you or online at dunbarlumber.com. This hour of Canucks Talk is brought to you by Rack Steel. Rack Steel offers industry-leading heli forklifts and engineered racking solutions. Visit them online at racksteel.com. All right, so we were talking about it a little bit. We alluded to it a little bit in the first segment there, the goaltending situation for the Canucks. And as you were saying, for so many different reasons, Thatcher Demko playing like four more games of the seven this season, staying healthy, playing really well, looking like Thatcher Demko, that's a big deal. It's a big deal for him, potentially a big deal for the team as well. But I do think, you know, and I was saying we should power rank kind of hard decisions the Canucks have to make. I think we can all probably agree. Number one is Elias Pettersson. You got to figure out something there. Would we say number two is Rick Tocchet? I don't know if that's a hard decision. They want him back.
So it's a situation you want to figure out. You want to do tough decision power rankings.
Sure.
I think number one is with a bullet. I actually think number one with a bullet is goaltending.
No, I think that. Okay. I don't want to talk about Pettersson because I do want to talk about goaltending.
Yeah. I think number one is
it's goaltending. Clearly Pettersson. But anyways, we've talked a lot about Pettersson.
Well, no,
I'm trying to avoid my slide into Jason Brough here.
So the thing with Pettersson is it's a relatively binary decision.
Sure.
Okay. So it's do we still believe that this guy can be a star player?
Mm-hmm.
Or not
here,
right?
Yeah. That's a star player in our
a star
situation.
Player for us,
yeah.
Or not, because the magnitude of that commitment, right? The 11.6 for seven more years dictates that if you're not comfortable with that,
mm-hmm.
then in some ways it also takes like the difficulty. Like the reason I'd put goaltending aside from it ahead of it is that there's like different options. Different optionality, different ways of looking at it, different sort of degrees of decision making. There's like three different players involved and your analysis of all three of them. And so it's sort of more complicated in that there's more routes through it. Like if the organization looks at it this summer and decides we're not sure on Pettersson, then the route forward is actually pretty clear. It's like you trade him.
Yep.
You will get positive value back, and you don't worry too much about that.
About what he does on the other side.
Well,
yeah.
But also, you don't worry too much about sort of how much positive value, or like, I don't even think you need to sweat getting the perfect trade, because the fact that you're out or don't believe that it can happen here, should you decide it, means that just getting out of the commitment is what matters. Right? So in mm-hmm. some ways,
it's just such a high stakes decision.
It's a high stakes decision. That's fair. But
that's what I'm kind of talking
about. But it's also sort of rote, right?
Yeah.
Whereas like, I think the goaltending one is different. Now, I just want to set the stakes here. So Kevin Lankinen has started, because I guess he could start more.
Mm-hmm.
45 games for the Canucks, but Demko left two games pretty quickly. So he really played 47 games. Now, and for what it's worth, Lankinen has 47 decisions. So in the 47 games that Lankinen played, the majority of the games, and I had this number wrong yesterday because I said 103 points because I was doing it attached to starts, but it really should be attached to decisions. Still, 24, 14, and 9, that is a 99-point pace.
Yep.
Across more than half the season. Your number one goaltender this year, your most used goaltender.
After training camp had started.
Right.
Yeah.
With him in net, you were a team pacing to have 100 points. You would have been a clear playoff team in the Western Conference. But, and it's a big but, Artur Shelov started 9 games. He was your day one starter. You went 2-6-1 in those games. The two wins both coming against the moribund Chicago Blackhawks. And that point percentage is not so pretty, right? That's effectively 5 of an available 18 points, right? Which is a 82-game pace of 45 points.
Nice.
46, 45.5. And then you've got Demko. Now, Demko, we all know, dealt with an unprecedented injury. He was a Vezina caliber goaltender just a year ago. And it was to be expected that there would be some rust, I think, right? There have also been flashes where Demko has looked like vintage Demko, especially of late. But as we saw against Seattle, right, it's not like that's just like a linear up, you know, like sort of tracking algorithmically upward for Demko. Like, there's still a lot of uncertainty there with the Canucks starter. Now, in Demko's 21 starts, well, so he made 21 starts, but he only has 19 decisions. In Demko's 19 decisions, the Canucks went 8-8-3, right? So that's 19 points across 19 games. We all know what that pace is, 82. So for me anyway, when I think about the goaltending question for the Canucks, fixing your performance in the non-Lankinen games, right? So your non-starter games, your goaltending depth games alone makes up the probable difference between Vancouver being a playoff team and not, right? If they had been a 500 point percentage team, like if you had Demko level performance in those in 30 games as opposed to just, you know, 27 or whatever, as opposed to just 18, 19, like those Shelov's games, you're probably a 94, 95 point team and you're in it till the very last
game
of the season. You're right there. Like that alone makes up the gap. Now, the Canucks have signed Lankinen, right? As we all know. And what is it, 5 years, 4.75?
Yeah.
Or 4.5?
4.5, I believe.
Yeah, 5 years, 4.5, yeah. Demko is extension eligible as of July 1. And Shelov's, right, is on a one-way contract, $850K. He'll be an RFA on the other side, but he will not be waiver exempt.
Mm-hmm.
So here's why this is fascinating to me. Demko becomes extension eligible, and yet no one's interests would be served by considering a long-term deal, right? Like Demko,
I mean, depends what they offer him from Demko's perspective.
No, but
yeah.
That's the point, right? Like one healthy 55-game season where Demko looks like Demko from now, right? 12 months from now, we could be talking about Demko as a, you know, top goaltender again. Right. The sort of player who you're looking at a massive, massive valuation on. Right. The sort of overall inflationary pressure that we've seen from goaltenders here is really significant. Right. There are and it's going to continue to be. I mean, you've got some recent deals, like the one for Hellebuck, 8.5, right? You're probably, maybe you're not getting up to that level, but you know, certainly, the Shesterkin, recent deal, right? He's had sort of an off season. Allmark's going to set a new market here, right? Like, you know, you're definitely looking at 7+, I think, with Demko's track record, provided that this season looks like a blip a year from now. So from Demko's perspective, you got to chase that. Like, you have to, right? You're not gonna accept security for a lower cap hit now. You want to show what you can do and earn a fair market valuation beyond next season. And in Shelov's case, like, I mean, what do you do there if you're the Canucks?
I don't think it's the kind of thing where you can be worried about putting him on waivers.
No,
you know
of course
what I mean?
Not.
That's not in your consideration. You're just like, I don't know. I mean, I don't think he can really be in your plans for next year.
Okay, so what
you
if
have to
what
have
if,
a third goalie other than Shelov's?
What if he plays really well in the AHL playoffs? Like, what if you go on a run with him in the AHL playoffs?
Okay,
here?
Yeah.
Like, Shelov's season is not written yet.
Don't you think you still have to add at least? Now, I guess it depends. They do have Yuri Patera contract for another year, which is wild.
Sure.
Like Tolopilo. I don't know how they feel about Tolopilo, but like,
he's struggled this season
you
himself.
You probably have to sign quad A goalie X.
Even if you do consider something like trading Demko.
Yeah. Well, especially then, yeah.
Well, no. So if you don't trade Demko, right? And this is where this becomes complicated for me. if you enter next season with Lankinen and Demko together, right, 9.5 spent in net, that's not prohibitive in a, you know, $90 plus $95 million cap environment, roughly, right? That's not prohibitive. That's fine. And you trust that Demko can pick up the slack that you missed with Shelovs, right? That he can be better, that, you know, basically a 50-50 split, more or less, you know, keeps both guys fresh. You're pretty confident that Lankinen can do that. You probably don't want to count on Lankinen to play 55 anyway.
Nope.
Right? So you're kind of looking at a 42-42 or 41-41, and, you know, that gives him a chance to rebuild his value a bit, right? That gives you a chance to get sturdy goaltending, and that sort of answers the question. But where this sort of dovetails and becomes more complicated in my mind is when you think about how does this team actually add three impact forwards?
Mm-hmm.
Granted, of late when we've been watching them, Pettersson and Höglander have been out of the lineup, and I would count both guys as impact forwards, so it feels even shorter
right
than it is. And I guess Hedel too, right?
So yeah, but Höglander and Hedel are not the impact forwards we're talking about. They don't need to add three guys as good as Höglander and Hedel. They need to add three guys better than that.
Well, for
you
sure.
You know what I mean?
But I'm so my point is, even if Hedel, Höglander, and Pettersson were in the lineup, right, plus Besser and Suter, both of whom expire after the season, I think you'd still be looking at the Canucks lineup and saying they're at least two
yep.
top six caliber forwards short, right? Is that fair?
Yes.
Yeah. And if Suter and Besser leave, does that become three?
Quite possibly. Yeah.
So you're looking at wanting to add three impact forwards with $14 million in cap space. Are you willing to trade your 2025 first? Yes, like for sure, if it helps you get there. But Elias Pettersson, the defenseman, Lekaramäki, the forward,
Volander
who doesn't need to be captioned that way. Volander, Atu Ratu.
Yep.
Well, it's just the, you know, Elias.
Yeah.
At some point, doesn't your 1B backup goaltender have to be something you consider moving, especially given the commitment you've already made to Lankinen, and especially given this team's various other needs, right? Like, are you comfortable? It's not a very strong UFA class, but are you comfortable trying to cobble together sturdy depth goaltending, something that this club needs improvement at, with, you know, a Dan Vladar?
Are you comfortable trying to find another Kevin Lankinen? That's what we're talking about.
Right.
Right? Is like basically get another Kevin Lankinen, and then your duo is two Kevin Lankinens. You know what I mean? Like another guy that we feel okay handling 35 to 45 games for us. That's what I think that's what you're talking about. Now, that probably has the added bonus, too, of reducing what you're spending in the crease next year.
Yeah. So
that,
I think that's part of it.
You're freeing up some additional cap space.
And, you know, I mean, is there an argument too, you know, and this is sort of where this dovetails for me as well, where like you're going to go into this all in summer trying to build a contender again or get back to plausibly contending and appealing to Quinn Hughes, Operation Keep Quinn Hughes. And yet, do you need to be careful about building out a hedge position in case things go pear shape, right? Can you afford to deal from your surplus, your newfound surplus of young guys here, right? Can you afford to go into next season trying to contend and pushing so many chips into the table that if things go pear shape on the Keep Quinn Hughes file, you've also traded a Volander or whatever,
and then you're like, oh my gosh, now we're really like, really up against it.
And so I sort of wonder about, you know, I mean, how important is it that Demko finishes this season available, plays relatively well? This league knows what Demko can be, and we know what Demko can be. And if you're making the argument to me that, hey, given how much the backup goaltending cost them over the course of this 82-game season, and sort of given what the most realistic path playing defense, Rick Tocchet style, to being like a 100-plus point team probably looks like, Demko Lankinen is how they should enter next season. If that's your argument, I think that's a really, really strong one, right? But I also think there's an argument to be made that as this team considers Operation Keep Quinn Hughes and what could lie on the other side, that some of these players who are extension eligible beginning July 1, you know, if you're able to find hockey deals for those guys that bring in players with more term, ideally forwards who help you, that's certainly something you have to consider, even at some cost to your upside.
Yeah.
And so I just think that this is a really uniquely tricky set of considerations.
Just in general, even if you leaving out the Quinn Hughes stuff, given the heights he's hit, but also his injury history and the fact that you have Lankin under an extension now, would make this a really difficult decision and a really difficult situation to navigate. Then you add in the timeline with Quinn Hughes, the desire to be a contender next year and all of that, and it becomes even more difficult. I think the point about, okay, do we want to lock into this guy? He's got 1 year left. Can we afford to lose him for nothing? Do we have to act now? Or else are you staring down a repeat of the Brock Besser situation, right? Where, and now it's different because Brock Besser was coming off a career year, but you keep him because it's like, no, we want to win now with him. We'll see if we can work something out. Then you let it go past the deadline, and now there's a strong possibility that you end up losing him for nothing. Do you want to repeat that with Demko? I guess the fly in the ointment always comes back to, well, what are you getting in return? What's the value you're getting for Thatcher Demko coming off an injury-riddled season on the trade market with 1 year left on his deal? I don't know. I do think there's some teams that would be interested.
Yeah.
I think about a team like Carolina. You know what I mean? That's like, hey, let's see if we can get hot with this guy for 1 year. We're not going to sign him to an extension because that's not us. But like, if we can, we'll manage his minutes really well. And if we can get peak Demko going into the playoffs, and that gives us the edge to break through in a way we haven't. Like, I can see Carolina being into that. The question is just, what's the value on the return?
Yeah, I think make no mistake that Demko has a lot of admirers around the league for obvious reasons. This is a player with real star potential who's shown it repeatedly. Right. And he's technically excellent.
Yeah.
Right. Like there are NHL goalie departments built, you know, in part to like emulate some of the aggression, some of the positional excellence that Demko brings all the time. He's become a template goaltender. His style has been deliberately copied, and his path by guys like Jake Oettinger. Like there are star players, star goalies in the league now for whom, you know, he's like your favorite goaltender's favorite goaltender.
Yeah.
I'm serious. So I think everyone knows what that guy can do when he's capable. And when you're thinking about goaltenders, when you're thinking about the lack of UFA options, if you're a team that is thinking to yourself, hey, we're a goaltender away, a one-year flyer on a guy who could legitimately, you could just wake up in February and be like, LOL, we have the best goaltender in the league, or one of the three best goaltenders in the league.
We have a guy who's going to be a Vezina candidate this year.
And
he's only making $5 million. That's the other thing. He's a bargain if he's hitting that level.
We have a guy who NHL players think, man, the only guy we'd rather hit the ice with in a must-win game is like Vasilevsky, I guess. You know, like that's how players, that's how Demko's, you know, teammates, that's how NHL players feel about a healthy on form Demko.
Mm-hmm.
So that will return value. I guarantee it. It's just, can the Canucks afford to hunt for value in that manner? Given how badly they also need him.
And I think the question really, to me, it's not so much about next season. It's about if you're playing out the scenarios as the Canucks and you think, okay, let's say Demko plays 45 games for us in the regular season next year. Lankinen gets the other ones. Third goalie gets a few, whatever. Demko plays 45 games at Demko level, at a really, really good level, and maybe we win a playoff series next year. What would we have to pay Demko to keep him? And if you're not interested in that deal, then I think you have to explore trading him. You know what I mean? Like play out what's the most plausible but really strong scenario from Thatcher Demko's perspective for his bargaining power. And if that's a walkaway number for us, if that's not a contract we're interested in, if we're only interested in, you know, trying to get a bargain deal where he's pricing in the uncertainty of his injuries, if you keep him and he plays amazing and that makes you want to walk away from him because he's going to be too expensive, then just get ahead of it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Get ahead of it and move on now. I think that's the big discussion.
Yeah. Because that's what they didn't do with Besser this summer.
Yeah. Like that, to me, that's the big discussion is, not, yeah, you'd probably be better off keeping him because we all know what Demko can do in a short series. And as you said, like, there's a reason players view him that way. But if he lives up to his peak and that's actually like a bad thing for you going forward because you don't want to give him that much money now if Lankinen signed, then don't put yourself in this position. Because as somebody texted in, like, well, couldn't they trade him at the trade deadline? Well, that's when you really see goalie value plummet. And that's a situation that, like, has they didn't trade Besser. What makes you think they're going to do it with Demko? Like, do it now while you still have a chance to address the holes it creates and restructure your team in the new environment.
Want to just read this batch tweet before we go to break. Rick Tocchet's updates post-practice. Myers is day-to-day, probably won't play tomorrow versus Anaheim. Nils Amon being evaluated after leaving practice. Pettersson is feeling better. Hedl still in protocol. And Hoglander is getting close, but probably won't play tomorrow. So another emergency call-up forward, presumably, yep. If Amon can't go. And Mancini sure to draw in.
Yes.
If Myers can't go.
We'll hear from Rick Tocchet as well on the other side here, and then we can get into more of your questions. Dimitri's coming up at 1:30. It is Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drantz. We're broadcasting live from the Kintec studio. Kintec Footwear and Orthotics working together with you in step. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Keep your texts and thoughts and questions about the Canucks summer and I guess the rest of the season coming in as well. As we mentioned, the Canucks were on the ice practicing at UBC today. Drantz ran down just under the bullet points of what Tocchet had to say about some player health, and there are a lot of player health questions around the Canucks right now. But let's hear a full commentary from Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet.
We'll talk. Start with no Myers today. What can you tell us about this
day? Yeah, it's going to be day to day. Something happened last game. Tried to play through it for that's Mizey, but we shut him down the last 12. So probably won't play tomorrow.
And obviously, scary incident with Oman there. Yeah, what can you tell us about him?
Yeah, he's getting evaluated. That didn't look good either. So yeah.
How frightening is it when that happens in a practice?
Yeah, I mean it's just you get awkward. You know, you go on the boards wrong, hopefully it's nothing really bad, but it looked bad from my angle.
Saw Petey and Hedl are around. Any progress for either?
Just the same thing in the injured ice. Like I said, I think Petey's feeling a little bit better. Hedl's just going through that protocol stuff, seeing how he's feeling.
It looks like, it's positive. It's around.
Yeah, no, I think that's, especially for Hedl, when you get your heart rate up and then see how you react the next day. I think that's where the protocol comes from. And I think, like I said, I don't know. He's, like you said, like I think I told you guys last year, it wasn't as bad as last year, but who knows? But it is positive that he's skating.
Is Hoglander a possibility for tomorrow, do you think?
I don't think so, but he's getting close. He'll probably phone me tonight and want to play, but I think we got to, just wait a game or two, see, for him.
What's the preparation at this point? You've got two games, a couple tough opponents.
Yeah.
How do you kind of keep the vibe going, keep the guys going forward?
Yeah, I think it's habits, like good habits. I think good habits preach good foundation. It reinforces a lot of good things when you have good habits. It's something we've been chasing all year is the consistency level. And this is for another conversation why, but what we can control is good habits. We got some young guys here that we got to just keep preaching good habits, and I think that will build a good foundation. But it starts today, it starts tomorrow. Let's start July 1st or what training camp, but it's always got to start the next day.
All right, that's Rick Tocchet. We'll just dump out a little bit early there. We heard the injury
audio
updates, and as three-putt Shane texts in, SkyTrain interview did sound a bit like a SkyTrain station, but no, that's the bowels of the UBC practice rink. No pucks slamming off the boards this time, but just a very loud hum there in the background. So we heard
it's so
a little
annoying,
bit
man.
From Rick Tocchet.
That sound, I couldn't stand it.
Not great.
I turned to you like three answers in. I was just like, no! This is so bad.
Now, we can say also, and I saw this on Brendan Batchelor's Twitter feed, but he says, per Patrick Johnson of Post Media, Nils Amon had a sling on his left arm as he left UBC after practice. Ugh. Now, I will say, I had seen other people said, I think Noah Strang from Daily Hive said he went head first into the board. So if it's a sling on your left arm instead of a head injury, okay, you'll take that for sure. But seems like a pretty tough break for Neil Zaman at practice out at UBC today. And as you heard from Talkett there, he is being evaluated. Myers day-to-day tried to gut through it. As Talkett says, that's Mizey, but not likely to play on the weekend. Now, to build a little bit on the conversation we were having about goaltending in the previous segment, and one thing you said and that stood out to me was not just the particular goaltending situation, but the fact that Demko is in this, he's extension eligible, right? He's got 1 year left on his deal, and then he's going to be an unrestricted free agent, and that goes into it just as the Kevin Lankinen and all that other stuff does. But there's other players in that situation as well for the Canucks. And as I was saying, you know, you kind of got in this bind with Brock Besser because you didn't address a player like that at the top of your roster. That's fair enough. You said, okay, we kind of want to see it again. Didn't really do it again, but did enough to give himself a very strong bargaining position when he hits the open market this summer. And I wonder just with the volume of work they have to do, I look at a player like Connor Garland, who is going into the last year of his deal, has no trade protection whatsoever, obviously just a hair under $5 million, 4.95, and I think has played well enough, and especially in this new salary cap world, that he would have value. He is a player with value that you can trade and get something back. Get a home run impact player? No. But can you trade him as part of fleshing out your assets? Rebuilding your kind of stock of assets to go get an impact player, or even just a player who has 3 years of term.
Any smart team should be hunting guys like Garland.
Yeah. And I do think
that's my opinion.
Because I look at this and I think I see these opportunities, right? Whether it's Demko, whether it's Connor Garland, as guys, okay, hey, they're coming up. Can you get creative here? I also think, you know, there's like a limit to how many transactions you can make. You know what I mean? Not a legal limit, but just sometimes we get into these like fantasy hockey things where it's just like, well, just execute 7 trades in a row. You know what I mean? Like trade these 3 guys and then make these 4 trades, bring these guys in.
Listen, that might be fantasy hockey, but it's also what this might take. Like, I'm sorry. I don't know.
Yeah, because then you get
what
back
else
to like,
tell you.
Well,
like,
extraordinary situations demand like extraordinary answers.
Responses,
and they're
yeah.
an extraordinary situation here. So you might have to go, especially if you don't want to move your 2025 pick and, you know, Volander or DPD or Lekkomäki, because that's the most straightforward way, right? You take all your best draft capital and young players and you package them together in a couple of different deals and you try to go out and get those forwards. If that doesn't interest you, then you start to have to get really creative. And it's a bunch of two-step processes, right? It's Connor Garland for either players with term that you think you can help you more, or assets, or both, and then you flip those assets. Do you do it with Demko? Are there other opportunities to move guys off your roster? It's a lot of turnover. It's daunting. But I think the Canucks management really needs to have this kind of like blue sky, like a galaxy brain approach to it, right? Where it's not, forget all the straightforward normal things you do to add a star player to your team. You got to think and, you know, look under every rock and try to find every possible avenue you can to adding this impact talent.
I'll tell you what, man, the asset that would have the most value, okay, aside from the players, because we'll get into the Garland thing, I've got some stuff to add, but just like thinking about it a little bit, the asset that would have the most value without messing with core pieces on the roster or your key younger prospects is your 2026 first.
Absolutely.
Lottery protected, right? Like that's lottery protected, so it shifts unprotected to 2027. The old JT Miller, Philip Hronek.
Mm-hmm.
Like they did it with Hronek and with Marcus Pettersson, but they didn't trade their own first in either case.
That's true.
Right? But they did it themselves with the JT Miller trade. That's the sort of deal that I think would move the needle for a smart team because, you know, not that they'd be like lining up to bet against the Canucks because of where the Canucks are positioned, but there's enough uncertainty in the profile that it's volatile enough as an asset that you could hit the home run.
There's enough uncertainty and there's enough upside in that draft that
right.
you're looking at it, right?
Right. Could we end up holding a first round unprotected for the Vancouver Canucks, you know, after they trade Quinn Hughes in the summer of 2026 would be how they'd look at it. I'm not saying that's going to happen. I'm saying, is there a chance that you're holding that asset?
Yep.
Because then you'd pay significantly for the chance to hold that scenario, right? To short sell where the Canucks are positioned. And as for the Canucks, they'd be like, well, we're confident in ourselves and our building. So we're very comfortable betting that that won't be the outcome here. And the player that we get is part of the reason that we feel confident about that. So, I mean, that's really the, like, oh man, that's the most realistic one to go. I'm telling you right now, that
probably is,
that,
to be honest.
Like, at the moment I thought of it, I was like, oh no.
But
I hope
also,
we're not on, I
that's
hope we're
also
not doing
one,
the show.
If you are concerned at all about hedging for your post Quinn Hughes future, that's the one you least want to trade.
Correct.
You know what I mean? Because it is potentially the highest upside future one.
That's the Landon DuPont draft.
No, it's the Gavin McKenna draft. 2027 is the Landon DuPont draft.
Where it would be unprotected. You would never be trading.
Oh, I see. Okay. So you do the rollover. Okay,
you see what
okay,
I'm saying?
Okay.
You're spotlighting the wrong.
Well, if you're still in the Gavin McKenna draft, now I'm interested.
Anyway, to come back to Garland, I was driving on the viaduct into downtown the other day and noticed that it's Garland who's replaced Miller on the side of the building, on the banners. Mm-hmm. We know that Garland is a Rick Tocchet favorite.
Mm-hmm.
And I will say this, like, I think there's been
very close with Quinn Hughes as
right.
well.
But also, just from what I'm hearing in the vibe around Garland over the course, like, his evolution as a Canucks player.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe Tocchet has something to do with this. Maybe the situation, how difficult this year was. But I don't underrate, I think, how important Garland's become as, like, a leader internally. A guy pulling on the rope in the right direction amidst a really tough, difficult, complicated season. I'm hearing a lot of that these days. That, like, a lot of what's good around the Canucks seems to be associated behind the scenes, obviously, with Quinn, but increasingly with Garland. In a way that wasn't always true, you know, like during some of the Boudreaux seasons
yeah.
or what have you. So I think this team would miss Garland a lot. I mean, I think Garland's a really, really good player. I think where you have to be really strategic in terms of the hedge position, the Quinn Hughes hedge position, right? Operation Keep Quinn Hughes, we're all on board with.
Mm-hmm.
We all think that you do everything you can to appeal to one of the best skaters in the league, period. Not controversial.
No.
Maybe at some point we'll do the mental exercise of, is this the right path? But the answer is pretty much yes. It's the only path. But is there an argument to take guys, it's not about the players so much as it's about the timeline. These guys who are extension eligible this summer, right? Demko and Garland stand out to me, obviously. And sort of explore the possibility of using them in deals. Maybe it's like Mancini and Garland, right? Mm. Maybe it's Hoglander and Demko, right? Like, do those packages become enough?
Together, yeah.
Because look, not that the Canucks have made decisions about this. Like, there's going to be a lot of meetings and a lot of time for them to sort through all of this. But I will tell you this. I think the club understands and expects the bidding on, like, the top free agent wingers, for example, Marner, Ehlers, those guys, to get out of hand. And I think the Canucks have an understanding that if they're going to bring in a top line winger or a star winger, an impact winger, which they need regardless of whether or not they keep Besser.
Yep.
The trade, as opposed to free agency, is probably going to be the most fruitful and likely path forward, which is not to close any doors on them pitching guys in free agency so much as I do think the club recognizes that might be necessary, that you know, swinging a big trade is going to be a significant part of their effort to get back to contending next season. Without question, like, that is, take that to the bank.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of the center ice position, the top two line center that this club's going to be hunting for. And that's regardless of sort of what information
whatever
we get on
Pettersson
and Filip Hedl.
Yeah.
Right? Because he might end up wanting two.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I don't have any insight on the Pettersson thing. Like, I think that's going to be closely guarded until the club makes a decision one way or the other. I can tell you this. I don't think the club views the NMC kicking in on July 1
right.
as some ironclad deadline.
I don't think they should, but it's also, you should also make a decision regardless. You
yeah.
know what I mean? Like, even if you didn't
exactly.
have the no move clause kicking in, you should still make a decision, right?
100%.
Now. So, either way, the timeline's kind of the same.
It is. I'm just saying, it's not, you know, Carson Soucy and JT Miller
yeah.
just got traded in the last month.
Yeah.
Well, I guess Miller was 2 months. But in the last 8 weeks, they moved two guys who basically had ironclad trade protection. An NMC in Miller's case and an NTC in Soucy's. Not an NTC with a list either, right? Like, so, you know, you can navigate around that. I don't think the teams view it that way. I expect that one to be a closely guarded secret, like a decision that the club will not, that's not going to leak out. Would be my strong expectation, unless they decide to keep him.
Right.
Then you say, and in fact, then you say it at locker room cleanout day.
Right.
Right. You make it dead clear.
I don't know if they're going to make a decision by then.
Yeah, I agree.
They feel comfortable announcing like that. Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, you could also do the Oliver Ekman-Larsson thing.
Right.
Right. Where you like, you know, say
it's not our intention right now.
Exactly.
It could be later.
Oh,
we'll
God.
See.
You honestly almost made me throw up in my mouth with it's not our intention right now. That is such good hockey GM speak. Wow. GM Jamie. Yeah. So, but I do think looking at especially the Garland Demko timelines and seeing if can you bundle those guys to find dudes around the league, like play comparable. I mean, I don't think you can necessarily upgrade on Garland, but can you find a guy who's a little bit bigger, a little bit faster,
right.
who maybe fits the north-south style that Rick Tocchet wants to play just a little bit better. Ideally, they're maybe a little bit younger, right? And ideally, they have a little more term on their deal.
Yeah.
A little more control, right? Because, I mean, we'll see exactly how next season unfolds and where the team gets to and, you know, how Operation Quinn Hughes unfolds. And that's the new center around which, you know, the Canucks Talk Galaxy spins.
Mm-hmm.
And probably that of the hockey club, too, as it should, right? As it should be. And, you know, don't you think if you're a pending UFA, that impacts your own decisions?
Yeah, absolutely. Like the flux around the team and all that.
Now, if you're keeping Rick Tocchet, right, if you negotiate an extension with Rick Tocchet, I'm not opposed to making an extension offer to Garland this summer, right? Like, I think Garland can be part of the solution. I love the way he plays. I mean, You want
it like some yeah.
You want to pinpoint a Canucks player that didn't shortchange a single effort all season. I don't know who you'd list ahead of him and Quinn Hughes, right? I mean,
yep. Yeah.
So I that's probably worth exploring too. But I do think you have to consider Operation Hedge and Pivot. in as you consider where you're going, I do think it's preferable for the club to consider dealing veteran players with value off their roster for other veteran players, ideally those with more term on their deal and who maybe fit better with what the club wants to do. Like, I think that's a more fruitful path forward than considering dealing from the Pettersson, Lekkerimäki, and Belander tier,
yeah.
right? I think you have to be protective of that. Because otherwise, if things go pear-shaped on you, you're just staring at, like, the grimmest situation in the league. And I definitely don't think you want to be there.
And I just, you're also going to need those players. Like, part of the path forward for Operation Keep Quinn Hughes and to develop into a contender in the next 2 years probably involves one of those guys, at least, if not two of them, really popping and hitting close to the upside they have. You know what I mean? Like that's what really could get you over the hump to be a true contender is if you're able to add a couple of the impact pieces up front and then Lekkerimäki develops into a true top six player. You know what I mean? Like really pops off. And then Volander develops into a rock solid top four guy. You kind of need those lottery cards who are close enough to, you know, who are going to be a part of your team and then you'll see where they go. Like I think you need that just from the quality of your team perspective right now in the here and now to give yourself a higher ceiling. Forget about the future after Quinn Hughes leaves. So, you know, and then you get down to like the Mancini, Aturatu tier. And it's like, yeah, okay, but what are those guys bringing back? How much are they moving the needle for teams as part of a package? You're still, you're throwing those guys in with your first round pick either this year or next year. And then it's a similar discussion. So to tie this into our hardest decisions or biggest stakes decisions the Canucks have to make this year or in the summer. So I think Pettersson for me is number one. You have goaltending number one. That's fine. But I put goaltending up there as well.
We kind of agree that those are they're like 1-2.
Now, Tocchet is high stakes, but I also think it's very straight. It's not like they have to debate a lot. They want Tocchet.
They want Tocchet, yeah.
So it's just a question of, like it's up there, obviously, because it's a big thing you have to resolve, but it's also just clearly that you want Tocchet.
I feel like it's more like the first item on the to-do list, but but if we're ranking it by stakes, I feel like it's relatively low. Also because at the end of the day, you know, you're talking about a coach. Like, you're not talking about a player. You're not talking about a fully guaranteed contract that hits your books.
Yeah.
You know, like, I just think player personnel issues at the end of the day are higher stakes inevitably.
Yeah.
Than coaching decisions. So, you know, I think if you want to put it third, I'm not going to argue with you. But I mean, I even think things like how you navigate Connor Garland being extension eligible.
Well, that's because I was arguably more. The next ones that come to mind for me are like pending UFAs of forward, Besser and Suter.
Yep.
Now, even that, like I have a
that's high stakes.
It is, but I have a kind of a hard time putting Besser in there because like I feel like we kind of know which direction it's going. It might not.
Yeah, I don't think that's right.
All right,
fair enough. I mean, sorry to be clear. I think your sense of it is fair.
Yeah.
But I also.
But it's not written in stone yet.
Just at the end of the day, when you're talking about a player who does like it here and is settled here, you know, all it takes is one offer and you're sitting at your, you know, at your Burns Lake cottage or whatever in June, stressing about your next deal. And it's like, or I could get this done and just do what I've been happy doing for years.
Keep things the same.
Yeah. And that, you know, never underestimate how little people want to move their stuff.
Shout out to Greg Wyshynski. Yeah. Because I think the other, like the next decision I would put there, or one of them, would be just other than the pending UFAs and Elias Pettersson, who are kind of the clear cut, what are they going to do with this guy? Are they going to bring him back? Is he going to be back? Like just figuring out who on the rest of the roster is part of the solution. Who on the rest of the roster do you really believe in and do you want to keep and who's expendable? And I don't mean expendable necessarily in that pejorative of a sense, but who can be an interesting trade chip? Just like, I think we've almost ignored the rest of the roster beyond the pending UFAs and Elias Pettersson when it comes to the discussion of who's going to be back, and maybe we'll throw Thatcher Demko in there as well. But you don't have to be locked into these guys just because they're under contract. You know what I mean? Like, I think there is, again, as I get to the point of you have to be willing to be a little bit creative here, and maybe you do have to complete more transactions than a team normally would in the summer. You got to explore every avenue. And if it means moving like a Nils Höglander that you signed to a 3-year extension that kicks in next year, or a Kiefer Sherwood who's under contract for one more year. Yeah, he's been great. You love what he's brought, but that doesn't mean it can be off the table as a move. So I think just that process of figuring out who we like, who we want to commit to, and who we are really willing to explore trading, that is high up on the decision list for me as well. Because I don't think it can be as simple as, well, we'll let a couple UFAs walk and we'll try to sign a couple UFAs. Like, I think this demands a much more creative, proactive approach to trying to improve this team.
Yeah, I mean, I think their needs are massive. Their needs are massive. And the truth is that they don't really have the weaponry to credibly execute what they need. You know, you can't. They don't have surplus trade chips where you could complete a deal for a guy who's a straightforward bet to fill your need at top line wing, right? You can probably find a guy who is a good bet, but not a clean bet, if that makes sense, right? Mm-hmm. A guy who, when it happens, will be like, okay, that's an interesting answer, maybe, as opposed to like, wow, they got that guy?
Yeah.
They don't have the assets to swing that sort of deal in a way that won't be felt in terms of, you know, a prospect that they could come to regret having dealt, or, you know, a hole blown open on their roster elsewhere. The Demko example is perfect, right? Like, that's why I think it's such a hard decision, because I think one of their biggest needs in some ways is like stability in those depth goaltender starts. And he's the best answer, or the best possible answer for it.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, if, you know, you have two NHL level goaltenders, that's like the most obvious surplus we could find when talking about where the Canucks could find value to deal.
Surplus value, other than their young, like some young defensemen, which there's some major risks with doing that.
Or maybe Nils Höglander, because you have Garland and you like what Sherwood did and on and on. But, you know, I think we have to expand our minds in terms of what sort of routes the club may have to consider here.
All right, we'll take a break. Dmitry Filipovich, he's the host of the Hockey PDO Cast, joins us for the final segment here, as always, on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drance, live from the Kintech Studio. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and rental warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their three locations to serve you, or online at DunbarLumber.com. Now joining us, as he always does here on a Friday afternoon, he's the host of the Hockey PDO Cast on the Sportsnet Radio Network. It's Dmitry Filipovich. What's going on, man?
Fellas, happy Friday.
Are you, I know you are, just over the moon of anticipation about the big double set of Canucks games. The 1 p.m. Saturday game against Anaheim, really, with the season already cooked. That's the one we all have circled on our schedule for this weekend.
Especially after how fun the last meeting was at Rogers.
That was incredible. Yeah. So big set of Canucks games. Okay,
Was that your least favorite game you've ever watched?
Which, the Ducks game?
Yeah, the one that like went on until like 10:45 local time.
There's
so many stoppages and things.
Oh, yeah, that was bad. Yeah.
That was a tough one.
That was the one where Greg Cronin looked at his watch, was like, oh my god, it's past my bedtime.
I honestly swear I can come up with worse. I think the worst game that I saw this year, worst Canucks game anyway.
Should we do a draft of you drafting your least favorite games?
No, there's not that many I hated.
There's been some really bad games.
Well, I would say the number one game that I thought was the worst game I watched all year, I wasn't actually at, blessedly, and it was the January 10th 2-0 Hurricanes victory over the Vancouver Canucks.
Oh, yeah.
That was, I thought, the game with the fewest scoring chances or things to get excited about. Like, if you went to a game, if you paid money to go to that game, I just think you'd have been like, we got to cheer for a goal. It was like a Jordan Martinuk goal that like deflected off two guys. It was so ugly, man. That game was the worst game that I, that was a game that I felt I had to sit through, and I had the luxury of watching it on television.
I think the Ducks game was worse. It was so poorly played.
It was really poorly played. Well, the Ducks ran out of gas, right?
Yeah,
like they were.
Yeah, that was a 4-point game.
They were dead in the water.
A big 4-point game.
Oh my god. The fake 4-point game on that, where people are like, the Ducks are getting into the playoff race. And it's like, you have not watched the Ducks play hockey.
The Ducks finally officially eliminated, by the way. They hung on an incredible long time there without being eliminated, but they are officially out of it. Actually, before we get to the Canucks, everyone is picking Ovi to do it tonight.
Mm.
The hat trick against the Blackhawks.
Yeah.
Blood in the water. He wants to get it over with. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, that's a pretty good opponent to do it against. I don't know. I think it'll drag on a bit.
Yeah.
I think they have another game.
I hope for
Monday
Spencer Knight's sake it's not tonight.
I also just want, like, I'm going to be happy. It's been exciting. It's going to be cool to see him break the record. I do find it kind of funny now that Batman and Gretzky are traveling with the team. If it just keeps going and going and going, like, there's something that appeals to the troll side of me about that.
I think the best case scenario would be that it doesn't occur
Until the last game against Crosby.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
That is what we should want.
Yeah.
And then when he does it, it would feel like the stakes are so high, right? Because it would be like, could you imagine we have to wait until next year?
Until next season. Yeah. That's probably the best. If you're writing the script, the script writers at NHL headquarters, that's what they should be putting down.
Jeff Merrick and Greg Wyshynski cooking up another John Scott saga.
That would be storybook. That's what we should all be aiming for.
Yeah, doing it against the Blackhawks, it's like
Friday night.
The only thing that would be cool is doing it with a hat trick. Doing it with a Hattie would be pretty cool. I gotta say, even if it is
two empty netters,
they can't put them out. They can't put them out. I don't think with an empty net. If it's for the record,
I think it would be so appropriate. No. He leads the NHL, and
I know, but you don't want like I don't think you can do it. I don't think you can put him on the ice.
What if it was a Ridley Greig slap shot empty netter?
Okay, yeah, he has to do something really cool that pisses off the other team.
I'll be honest with you, like one of the coolest goals he scored all year was that empty netter
the spinorama.
That was an incredible play. Like, there are empty netters that matter a lot. And think about all the times
I don't think they're going to put them out. I don't think they're going to do it.
They should. They should. There's no shame in calling game.
I get that. I'm not one of those people that's like, oh, he scores all his empty net goals. It's like, whatever. It's part of the game. That you take the league as you find it. That's fine.
I'm a little bit like that. I'm not. Just those. The Capitals have played a lot of games over the last 2-3 years where, like, anytime one of their other players scores into an empty net, they come to the bench for the handshake line and they're like, sorry guys, like you can tell I didn't like that part of the chase. I will admit that.
Yeah, I don't know.
I'm sorry,
like, you gotta do what you gotta do.
I'm sorry to be a hater, but that part of the chase was annoying to me.
Classic Drance.
I'll say it publicly.
Brandon Vancouver says, would you rather it's an empty net or a random puck that bounces off his ass? Probably an empty net.
Both of these are amazing options. I don't know. There's nothing wrong with an empty netter, and there's nothing wrong with going to the hard areas of the ice where goals are scored.
I think there's anything wrong with it. We're just talking preferences.
What if he scores and there's an offside review?
Yeah, that's nightmare scenario. Also, like
coach's challenge.
A shot. He shoots it, but it's tipped or it goes off someone else's. Like
he scored
knee
one of those.
Something.
And Dubois actually scored the other day.
Yeah, and then there's like the celebration, but then the NHL is like, but it went off this guy. Should we change it? Like, yeah, those are the nightmare scenarios.
And they have to. You have to change it these days. You used to be able to fudge it, but now.
Oh, yeah,
with game player props.
Yeah.
All the Pierre-Luc Dubois parlay bettors will be storming the offices in Manhattan.
Give us our goal.
Justice for Dubois. All right. Like, what do we even say about the Canucks and their schedule?
Oh, nothing. No, let's talk about...
It's ironic because it's a very entertaining week
schedule.
Of games.
It's
Golden Knights, Stars, Avs. You get to watch actual good teams play.
Well, here, let's go through and just talk about those teams going into the playoffs. Then,
let's do
right?
it.
Give our listeners something to... learn about these teams before they watch and sit down to watch them in the playoffs. I'm trying to think back on our conversations over the season. I don't think we've talked about Vegas almost at all. And yet they're probably going to win the division. They're in a very strong position. They are Vegas, so they're always good and they're always scary. How are you viewing the Golden Knights going into the playoffs?
Yeah, it's been a very uncharacteristic year for them from a drama standpoint.
Yes.
Even the trade deadline, very small measured moves, bringing in Brennan Saad and Riley Smith. No kind of drama in terms of LTIR this year, whether they're going to make the playoffs. They've just been kind of comfortably sitting atop the Pacific. Their defensive system is once again to the point where it was when they won the Cup 2 years ago. So I think that's incredibly encouraging. I know Tom's going to love this one. I think Jack Eichel is not getting nearly enough appreciation for the season he's having.
Yes.
I think I'd have him fifth on my MVP ballot and top five.
Selke
as well.
Yeah,
wow.
I've been eyeing that. Jack Eichel, dark horse, Selke candidate. I've been eyeing that very closely.
Yeah, they're dominating with him on the ice at 5-on-5. Because William Karlsson's missed so much time, I think he's played 40 more PK minutes than any other Golden Knights forward this year. And he's the main reason they have the best power play in the league.
Yep.
And he's going to score 100 points most likely this year. And he's on a top five team. I don't understand why he's not the clear fifth guy in the MVP conversation.
And I know that it's not... Yeah, and I know that it's not like included, but the way that he brought it when it mattered in the Four Nations, how oppressive his minutes were from a Team Canada perspective. I mean, I thought he was America's best defensive forward throughout that tournament, and especially in the gold medal game. Absolutely lights out. Not that I'm going to weight that as a voter, but it was something that sort of opened my eyes that maybe I have to take another look at this in terms of his defensive contributions. Because there's a lot of Knights. Like, the Golden Knights are obviously an exceptional regular season team, but we also know that they'll hit a different level come playoff time. Like we have that sort of built in. And there's a lot of games where Jack Eichel, you know, I compare him almost to like Krang from Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, where he can like come in and just sort of pace himself through games and still have it completely on a string. We've seen it at Rogers Arena a lot over the past few years. And I think with some of the injuries that they've had, I think he's had to exert a different level of energy, and I think it's made him a more dominant two-way piece this year.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, they've had, what, Shea Theodore got hurt during Four Nations. Mm-hmm. Yep. He missed a significant period of time. William Karlsson's played only like 40-ish games, and they lead the league in fewest expected goals against, and they're like fifth or sixth or something in actual goals against. So, yeah, I mean, it's a testament to, I think, the team and the coaching, obviously, but I think Eichel's clearly post-cup, really, like he did it during that playoff run, but he's taken his game to whole new heights. And we haven't talked about this as much, I think, because everyone kind of takes it as a formality that Vegas will just pay him whatever he wants. But he's entering the final year of his deal next year, similar to David,
eligible.
Right? So I'm curious to see, because they've been pretty ruthless about like not committing to guys into their 30s and moving on. I don't think they would do that with Eichel, considering how good he is and what he means to them.
Yeah.
But it's also like, I haven't heard anyone talking about his looming extension case.
I bet they make him a Dreisaitl type offer and completely, like, I think him and Mark Stone are the two exceptions. That would be my strong expectation from Vegas. Can we talk a little bit about Pavel Dorofeev?
Always.
What do you have to say about Pavel Dorofeev? He surpassed Nick Waugh on your Vegas Golden Knights forward power rankings.
He has. I mean, 32 goals. He's hit the post 11 times. You watch these games and everything, especially end of power plays, empty net situations at the end when they need a goal, everything is kind of under the pretense of setting up a Dorofeev one-timer from the right circle. Like, he's assumed the role as the trigger man, the most important finishing threat on the team. And so I think he's so fun to watch. Like, he just shoots every time he gets it. His shot is so violent. It's so effective. He's one of my favorite players for that.
Do they have enough wing talent?
Yeah, I think both Saad, who I know, you know, we had a running joke that you were commenting on his forechecking during the end of his Blues tenure.
Well, I was right.
You were right.
Yeah.
And clearly he had something left in the tank because he's been very good at Vegas.
Which I also, that was my big takeaway. So yeah. to set the scene for our listeners.
He was quiet quitting.
Yeah. Well, there was a Brandon, the Blues Canucks game in what, December?
It might even have been January,
and
to be honest.
And I was so outraged by Brandon Saad's lack of effort that I sort of spotlighted it to Dimitri. And also noted, he's so evidently quit on the team that I actually think he'd have value beyond his performance this season, which has been miserable, because all it's going to take to get like a much better level of contributor is him to be engaged again. It was reported that weekend, like 2 days later, that he had requested a trade.
Yeah.
It's just like, yeah, it was the most obvious. Yeah, quiet quitting is the right description.
Bad take by Brendan Saad.
I was going to say, he didn't see it coming.
He left before the going got good in St. Louis.
That's true.
And then now that's the most likely round one matchup between
that's
those two as well. So the Brendan Saad bowl is going to get heated.
Yeah, because that was
take
also
revenge for him quiet quitting.
It was very early in Montgomery's tenure, and Saad was scratched the next game. And I actually do remember thinking to myself, good, that means that Montgomery's like got some self-respect, enough self-respect to sort of hold this group accountable a little bit. So anyway, yeah, that was an interesting nexus of this season, I'd say.
It really was.
Yeah. He's been a big ad for them in your
mind. He's been good. Briley Smith also in his return. I think he's like, they're up 6-0 in his 5-on-5 minutes so far. And he, very few of those minutes have been with William Karlsson, who he's playing with now, because Karlsson just came back from injury. So I really like what they did on the wing group. Hurdle's been out recently, and when he comes back, they're going to finally have the full, I guess, combination or assortment of forwards. They haven't really had them all
Vegas
year.
Vegas having their full assortment of forwards just in time for the playoffs, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, I know. It's a new one. But there was no shenanigans this time.
I know.
Well, they didn't. It's not like they did anything with it at the deadline.
How disappointing.
Dallas. Canucks in Dallas on Tuesday. Is the blue line just a fatal flaw for Dallas as a Stanley Cup contender?
This is going to be a real, like, immovable force type of game, because I was watching Dallas last night on Thursday night. They're playing at home against the Nashville Predators, who are loudly quitting this year. And shots were 24-11 for Nashville with like 4 minutes left in the second period. And then Dallas scores five straight goals and wins it comfortably. But they've been doing this they have a 7-game winning streak now. They've been getting badly outshot against pretty inferior competition in every one of those games. So I'm very curious to see how this plays out.
So what's going on there? Is that like a malaise thing or like?
I just think the defense is not very good.
Yeah.
Like, the motivation thing is fine, although they're within striking distance of first in the Central, which is a massive deal this year for them to avoid a round one matchup against Colorado. But even, what was it? It was the first Canucks game post JT Miller trade, right? It was that night, that evening.
Well,
in Dallas.
He had been traded that night, yeah.
Yeah. And so he wasn't playing that night. And I think the Canucks outshot them like by 15 shots or something in that game. They lost, but it was like the first of this series of events for the Stars without Miro Heiskanen. They have enough forward talent.
Yes.
That they can just get by. Casey DeSmith, former Canuck, has obviously been awesome for them in a backup role as well. So I don't think this is like the exact representation of what they're capable of come playoffs, but I do think there's some underlying red flags that they probably won't be able to get away with by the time they have to face Colorado. And
how is Mika Rantanen fit there?
He's been playing better. He's been, Robertson has been awesome pretty much since the Christmas break on. Rupe Hintz is fantastic. It's a nice place for him to play. He's been starting to put up the points. The playmaking abilities certainly shine. So, yeah, I think he's going to turn around. As we'd expect, there would have been an adjustment period, especially what a whirlwind season it's been for him.
It's been a little
wild. I think it's on the way up, and Wyatt Johnson has goals in like six straight games, I believe. So they're really coming together offensively. They can score goals in bunches. And so I'm curious to see how much of this is just sort of playing it out until the postseason, waiting for Miro Heiskanen to come back, and how much of it we might up looking back on and being like, wow,
a major red flag.
We should have been worried about this when Colorado beats
them. That was more than just like good team doldrums at the end of the year.
Yeah.
Okay. And then their most likely playoff opponent, we'll see if they can catch the Jets for first in their division, but probably going to be the Colorado Avalanche, who the Canucks play on Thursday next week. I think Colorado is going to be a very, and I don't say this pejoratively because I'm probably going to pick them, I think they're going to be a very trendy Stanley Cup pick this year. And do you, like, is that wise in your view, Dimitri?
Well, sorry. Answer the question, then I'll
You interrupted.
I didn't. I was indicating that I wanted to say something.
You just wanted to say that I could talk.
Yeah.
The betting.
I'll have to jump in and tell somebody to answer the question. Answer the question, Dim.
He's talking to you. The Stars are the betting favorite right now to win the Cup.
Yeah, I know, by a lot too. Like plus 550.
By a lot. Yeah, I think the time to play them is certainly in round one because it sounds like Miro Heiskanen might not be back for game one.
Yeah.
If he is mid-series, I don't think he'll just step in from any injury playing 28 minutes a night the way he usually would. And so I think if you're going to catch them and upset them, it would be in round one. That would be my only hesitation about picking Colorado because it's going to be a gauntlet for them.
They probably
are going to have to go through like Dallas, Winnipeg, and then Vegas just to get to the Cup final.
That's pretty tough. Yeah.
And so that's pretty tough. We saw it kind of take its toll on Dallas last year when they had to do a similar thing on their way to the West final. They've been so good since the trade deadline, and the top line hasn't even been necessarily carrying them offensively. McKinnon and Makar are certainly putting up their points, but they're getting scoring finally from Brock Nelson's second line, from Charlie Coyle and Ross Colton's third line, even the fourth line, and Thomas's boy Jack Drury is chipping in, and so they're getting contributions from everyone, and they look pretty unassailable right now. Their power play has been fixed as well since the trade. They have very few weak links except for the roadmap of just having to beat all those teams in close succession.
The Vancouver Canucks have played the Avalanche twice this season.
Yeah, this isn't that same Avs team, though.
This is not the same Avs team, but they have beaten them twice, and they've outscored them 6-1.
Yeah. The Canucks have been a weird... Or the Avs have outscored the Canucks 6-1. The Canucks have been a weirdly tough opponent for the Avs for like a few years now.
They had previously lost 4 in a row.
Okay, but haven't a bunch of those been close?
Yes.
Yeah.
3-4.
4-1.
Yeah, fair enough. But like you know what I'm talking about.
I do.
Going back a couple of years.
Going back
to
that Boudreaux game that they always cited as like the example of how they
could play. Where it was like, why aren't they getting blown out here? But what I mean?
So I want to posit a theory, and I don't know that we'll actually see it in practice in Denver on Thursday because I expect the Canucks will be mathematically eliminated by that point. Mm-hmm. I have no idea what level of sort of energy the Canucks will be able to bring. But one thing for our listeners to watch for when they watch the Avs show on Thursday, as Dimitri likes to put out, the way that they compress the neutral zone, or sorry, the offensive zone, and bring in their defenders so tight. to the net, right? Like they're literally playing like a small area game.
Mm-hmm. And they just start circling like a shark. And
like one guy goes in circles and everyone else is like moving in. It's such a predatory style of play. And because they're basically saying we can reduce the space and our five will beat your five, it works because they're right. I think that is a good bet given their personnel, especially at the top of the lineup. And I think Vancouver, because of their length on defense, because of how this team defends, actually is a pretty difficult matchup for them to in terms of their style of attacking. And I kind of think that's why they've had success. Now, the Avs have significantly upgraded their roster, and I don't know if we're going to get the full tilt Canucks on Thursday, but I actually do think there's a matchup edge simply because Colorado kind of attacks like no other team in hockey. And the way the Canucks defend and the things Vancouver is good at defending against are an especially difficult matchup for it. What do you think of this theory?
I like that.
All right. We got to do like a rapid fire draft here.
Oh, well, let's draft Stanley Cup.
Bald players in the NHL.
No. Well, we brought up the Dallas Stars as a
Austin Matthews first overall.
No, I'm still picking Ryan Getzlaff all these years later. Catching strays for no reason. Ryan Getzlaff. Over the hairline. No, why don't we pick favorite Stanley Cup bets? The Stanley Cup winner outright market.
All right.
Okay. Value adjusted. You can go first, Jamie, and pick your Avs.
I don't even know what
they're
it is.
They're 8.5 to 1.
Okay, I'll take the Avs at 8.5 to 1.
They're the right 101, so there you go. Avs 101.
I'm gonna go with the Golden Knights at plus 1,100.
Yeah, so Golden Knights, 11-1.
Yeah, I'd like it more if they were playing Minnesota in round one, but I still feel like the path to the West Final is as good as you're going to get. So I'll go with the Golden Knights.
So I'm going to pick... Yeah, you guys, I think, picked the best ones.
That's right.
I'm going to pick the Winnipeg Jets at 10-1.
Yeah.
And the Ottawa Senators...
Oh, wow.
At 40-1, I want to get that long shot. They're going to play the Leafs in the first round. I think the Leafs are ripe for an upset. I think that's the paperest Tiger team other than like New Jersey going into the postseason. And yeah, I mean, the next round against either Florida team is going to be tough, but you win one of those. Maybe you get lucky and you're facing Carolina, mm-hmm. who are going to, you know, that means Linus Allmark is going to enter the Stanley Cup final as the Conn Smythe betting favorite.
Just that save percentage.
Every year. Happens every year.
Back to you, Dim.
All right, I'll go Carolina plus 1,000. I think against this New Jersey team without Jack Hughes and Dougie Hamilton and Jonas Siegenthaler, that's the first round pick I'm probably most confident in, other than whoever plays the Minnesota Wild.
Yep.
And then
at least you're getting a cash out.
And then round two against Washington, who I think isn't clearly as good as their record would indicate. And then by that point, I love the idea that the one year where the Hurricanes take this sort of perceived step back of trading Mikko Rantanen for futures, everyone's like, this isn't their year. Is the year they finally break through when everyone's off the scent. It would be very NHL.
What do you have Tampa at on that list?
Plus 1,100.
Plus 1,100.
Okay, I'll take Tampa. I like Tampa. I think they're really good. Tough first round series, but not like total long shot odds, but I like Tampa as the mid-tier target there. And you know what? I'll take the St. Louis Blues.
Yeah.
The red hot St. Louis Blues. 35-1.
Dude, yeah, they're good. Good. I actually love that pick. I thought about doing them in Ottawa.
2019
and just
Redux.
Locking in the juice.
One more, hey?
Yeah.
Locking in the juice. The Thomas Drantz story.
You know what? Give me the Kings plus 1,700.
Yeah, that was my next
I'm
pick.
I'm just take the juice. I think this Oilers team is very vulnerable.
Yes.
In round one, LA's played Vegas really well this year. And at that point, you're holding a plus 1,700 ticket. I like that.
I'm going to go with the Florida Panthers plus 650. Shout out to my alma mater.
Wait, doesn't that mean you left? Oh, no, Florida. I thought you meant like Sportsnet 650.
Oh, plus 650.
Yeah. I was like, what? Your alma mater. Now I get it.
Tom has an announcement at the end of the show.
Yeah. And so I have the Panthers, the Senators, and the Jets.
Oh, that's a gnarly combination of teams.
It's not great. Yeah, I'm not going to lie. I lost this one for sure.
I have LA, Carolina, and who was my first pick?
LA, Carolina, and
who could say? Vegas.
Vegas.
Vegas. Yeah. And then you have
Winnipeg, St. Louis, Tampa. Love that.
No, no, not Winnipeg.
Colorado, St. Louis, Tampa.
Yeah, that's good.
Pretty
love
good. That.
Yeah,
that's really
good. You win.
Yeah,
win.
All right, that is the show for this week. Thanks for listening. Enjoy the games on the weekend. We're back Monday for more Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.